This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome to the 1912 Exiles podcast, the original, the best Newport County podcast made by the fans for the fans. I'm Ed. Here we go then, final episode of the season. Two items of business today. We've got the away defeat at Bradford on Saturday, and then we'll pick up on the trust meeting with a couple of well-placed sources to tell us what happened, but also gaze into their crystal ball for what might happen next. But before that, let's talk about the football. I was just trying to work out what to call this episode. I think we will probably call it La Salvezza, which is what Italian football fans call that kind of beatific state of a tired and exhausted side who get themselves over the line to avoid relegation. Because although County's fourth division status has felt assured for a little while now, this awful end of season run has made it feel as though we've had nothing left in the tank. And it was against that backdrop that we asked Ian Street, our man on the Northern Beat, to make the short hop to Bradford on Saturday afternoon. So over to you, Ian. Tell us all about it.
Welcome to the North. It's the final day of the season. A mixed bag, I think we'd all say. But I think we're about 14 points clear of the relegation zone. I personally would have taken that at the start of the season, I'm sure we all would have done. However, you know, we've got one more game to go. We're on a hell of a streak of seven defeats. Can we change the narrative today? As I'm making the very, very short hop for me. It's only about 5 miles, I think, as a crow flies, over to Valparaiso from where I live. I love this one because obviously it's the closest game for me, so I could just walk to the end of my road, catch a bus over into Bradford. Just reminds me of what it always used to be like when I lived back in Newport, just catch a bus into town, have a pint and wander out to the ground. So that's what I will be doing today. Massive game for them though, isn't it? They've suddenly, they've done the reverse of us. A few weeks ago they were below us in the table and we suddenly, they now win today. If results go their way, man, you know, I don't think they will, but they could sneak into the playoffs. So it'll be a big, big crowd at Valparaiso today, I think. I think this is our 51st pod episode of the season. So I'm giving us all a bit of a clap on the back for that. Good effort, I think. Covered all sorts of things over the season. Bit of poetry, you know, all the classics. But yeah, just a thanks from me, really, for everyone who's, you know, listened and contributed and, you know, either financially or just, you know, contributed to the conversation and chipped in and joined the sort of community around the pod. You know, massively appreciated. And I think that one of the things I like about it is, you know, even those of us, the five of us who mostly do it, we've all got different views, as have all of you who listen. We all want the best for the port, but we've all got different views about how we might go about doing that. And I love that. You know, the key, I think, is, and I think we do this well and on the pod and amongst you as the community, you know, disagree respectfully. That's the way forward, isn't it? You just chat, you can have, you know, chew it over a pint, you know, chat about it, but just do it respectfully. So that'll be my plea. I'll be honest with you, I've had a bit of an existential crisis this season. I've become pretty disillusioned with everything around football. To such an extent, this is my 43rd season watching Newport. I've been genuinely thinking, will I make 44? And I chatted to my partner in the pub last night, and she said, "Streety, what on earth are you on about?" She said, "You know, get a grip of yourself. Stop being a drama queen. You love it. You'll be there for season 44." So that's my existential crisis over with. I can just read Camus over the summer, and that'll give me something to think about. So right, waiting for the 4:25, the bus at the end of my road over to Bradford. And then I'm meeting up with a Bradford City fan, and we're going to have a chat before the game and a beer. Possibly, there's rumour, charcuterie might be on the table. But we'll see, because everywhere's going to be absolutely rammer-jammed over in Bradford. So, yeah, we'll get over there, see what it's all about. So I've hopped over to Bradford, outside the Germanic splendour of the town hall, before I'm heading off to find Bradford mate and have a beer with him. Gets a bit maligned, Bradford, I think, but it's got a lot going for it. It's a very young city population wise, so there's it's got vibrancy and cracking food culture going on here, and all sorts of bits and bobs around, arts and stuff like that. It's got the Bradford Media Museum, which is absolutely brilliant. It's being refurbed at the moment, but it's fabulous. It's got the remarkable 1 in 12 punk club, of which yours truly is a member. And then you go further out, when you drop into Bradford, it's in a valley, hence Valley Parade, but as you drop in towards Bradford, you can sort of see right over the city, and Valley Parade, the ground, really noticeable. It stands out a mile. And then over beyond it, you can see it rises up onto the moors of Bronte fame and Heathcliff and all that. So you can go up to Haworth, where the Brontes have got a house, which is fabulous, lovely little village. And also nearby, you can go out to Salt Air, Titus Salt, and a sort of philanthropic industrialist who moved his factory out from Bradford, massive woolen mill, to Salt Air, which is now a UNESCO World Heritage Site, and it's really amazing place, and well worth a visit if you like a bit of social history and that sort of stuff. It's also packed full of David Hockney's if you like a bit of art as well. It's cracking. So anyway, enough of the social history. I'm going to get out and find this pub and see what it's all about. Right, so I found myself into a cheeky little bar in Bradford. And to be honest, I've got a few years before I slip off this mortal coil, but when I go, I think this is a bit of a slice of heaven, to be honest with you. I'm in a bar, it's selling craft beer, records, charcuterie, cheese, and it's within walking distance of a football ground. You don't really get any better than that, although it's so busy in here today, I've had a slight disaster because I've said, "Can I have some charcuterie?" And they said, it's too busy, but it's rammer jammed. I'm here with Mark, long-suffering Bradford fan. Before we get into today's game, how was the season panned out, Mark, for you? In terms of thinking, when the season started, were you thinking, we'll cruise this to division, we're going to struggle? Is the season better or worse, bearing in mind we don't know the result of today's game, better or worse than when you thought at the start of the season?
Last season we got to the playoffs, so hopefully this season we'll get to the playoffs again. Depending on today's results, I don't know. We need to beat you. Barrow need to lose. Crawley need to draw. If that all happens, it's been a good season. If not, it's not been the best season. But like all football fans, you start off with aspirations of promotion, at the least playoffs. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah. So it didn't start so well. You had Sparky in charge, didn't you? And I always thought when Hughesy came here, I thought, what does Mark Hughes know about fourth division football? And I think the answer is not much. But what went wrong under Sparky?
I think the Sparky appointment, I think to tap into his knowledge of football should have been good. And the fact that he's got all the contacts and connections with other football teams, we thought that he might be able to bring some loan players in. But his style of football were pretty negative. He'd focus on possession football, which in the fourth division, it's not all that good. So as much as it was good and he got us to the playoffs last year, his football were pretty bad. Yeah. And it wasn't attractive to watch. At the start of this season, the results weren't going well, so it was a good appointment to get Graham in instead.
And what has changed since? Because I think Graham Alexander's a good appointment. He knows stuff about this level. What's changed since he's taken over?
Graham seems to be quite pragmatic. He's got a sensible and realistic approach to football. He seems to know, well, he knows the division, definitely. And he seems to be like a people person. You get the best out of the players. It's very simple football. You press, you defend. If there's no one, lump it to Andy Cook up front and see what he can do with it. But if not, just play a football that's designed for fourth division, which unfortunately Sparky couldn't do.
Now, you've said the dreaded words in that sentence, Andy Cook. Right, so as a Newport fan, I look at him every time I see him play and I think, he can't be a professional footballer. He looks overweight, he looks slow, and yet he scores bagfuls of goals. He always scores against us. What is the secret of Andy Cook?
Andy Cook is an unfortunate looking man, so he'll put his head where other people are afraid to put their head. So he does score a lot of goals from headers and stuff like that. But say last year he scored 31 goals, which is good for any striker. Previous to that, he scored 11 and 12 goals a season. This year he's got 16. I'm with you. He don't look like a footballer, but he does seem to get the goods. But I was sat at home with Richard, who go to football with one day, and we're watching it on iFollow. He tackled a lad on sideline, and he ran about 40 yards and scored. And we were both like, has Andy Cook really just done that? Because that's not his style, really. Normally he just heads it in, but on that occasion, he did actually play some good football. So, but no, there's no rhyme or reason why Andy Cook scores as many as he does.
So is he the fox in the box? Is he like Bradford's fox in the box?
It's horrible. I used to play centre-half, and to mark Andy Cook would be horrible. So I'm sure centre-halves think, oh no, marking Andy Cook today, they'll hate it. So if you've got two big centre-halves, you won't do anything today.
We haven't got any centre-halves, so I think that's our problem.
In that case, I'm going to back Andy Cook to score first.
So one of the things that's always fascinated me about Bradford, since you came down to this division, I thought, well, you'll go straight up. You know, you're a massive club, huge fan base, big ground, and yet you've struggled to get out of this division. Why? Explain that to me. You know, we bumble around with 4,500. You'll have probably, you know, 20,000 or something in here a day. Why can't you get out of this division? I mean, you might, but why have you not been able to?
We do get a lot of season tickets sold. I think we're up to like 13,000 now. At the start of the season, we're getting between 17,000 and 20,000 to a game, which is good. But season tickets are cheap. Do we have a good investment? We've got Stefan Rupp. He hasn't put as much money in as he should. Should he put more in? That's the question. But inevitably, every year, there's clubs that have got money. This year, it's Wrexham, Stockport. A few years ago, to Mansfield, and they've all got promoted. So money does talk, doesn't it, I suppose, at the end of the day. But our wage bill is £3.5 million a year, which it's same as Stockport and Mansfield, whereas Wrexham's is £5.5 million, so they should get promoted. I did look at your Newport's wage bill, which is only £1.5 million, so I suppose in comparison it is right, isn't it? But why can't we get out? Who knows? Last year we got to the playoffs. We played against Carlisle. We won 1-0 at home. Well, we lost 3-1 away, but it went to extra time. And one of the fundamental issues with that was, no disrespect to Mark Hughes, because he's good at football, but he took our best attacking player off when it was 2-2 in extra time. And from then on, Carlisle attacked us for 30 minutes, and it was only a matter of time before they scored. So that's why, well, that's not why, but that's one of the reasons why we lost in the playoffs. But why can't we get out of this league? It's just a hard league to get out of.
It is a hard league, and I think that once you've got, you might have one team that's got a lot of money, but everyone else, as we found, and we might prove today, anyone can beat anyone in this division, I think. And although we've got the lowest wage bill in the division, and we were expected to, everyone thought we'd get relegated, you know, 7 weeks ago we were 2 points off the playoffs. It's a crazy league. We've lost 7 on the bounce, primarily because of injuries and all the rest of it, so I will really struggle today. But we're 14 points clear of the playoffs, so for me it's still been a good season for us, bizarrely. Just staying in is a big thing. So yeah. So what are we thinking about today? Firstly, are you going to win, and what's the score going to be? Secondly, are you going up?
Firstly, are we going to win today? We should do. I looked at the odds before the game, and you can get 8-1 on Newport to win today. Bradford are 2-7, so we should win. I'll go for a 3-1 win to Bradford. We'll get promoted. Yes.
Well, absolutely, bold talk. I like that. So I went to Doncaster as well. We beat them 3-1, and since then they've been on a run and we haven't. But Yeah, so I'm known, Mark, as being Mr. Positive on our pod, so I always predict that we will get something out of a game. I think it's going to be very, 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 very hard for us today. However, there's always a weird result happens, isn't there? So I think we're going to win 3-1. We're going to upset the party. But I think the problem you've got is you're reliant on Grimsby getting something down at Crawley, aren't you? I did Crawley away this year, and I went to Grimsby 2 weeks ago. Grimsby are awful. Even though they beat us, that says how bad we are. They were awful. I just can't see them getting anything. That's my thing. I think that's your problem's going to be. Your problem's not going to be us today. Your problem's going to be elsewhere.
Mansfield are going to Barrow. So Mansfield have promoted. They've got a lot to play for. Barrow have got a lot to play for. But again, they've been on a poor run, so we'll see what happens. But like you say, Grimsby, Crawley.
Yeah, I think that's the problem for you. Right, we need to talk about something that I know is potentially a controversial issue amongst Bradford fans. That's your mascot. Why do you have a chicken running around the pitch?
For starters, it's not a chicken, it's a bantam. It's called Billy Bantam. He's a legend. He's a legend. It stems from the colours at Bradford playing, which is the colour of a bantam, officially. But like I said, we talked about before, we used to have the City Gent, which... It's not how do you market a City Gent, a rotund fella in a bowler cap with a little monocle and a stick. It's not as sellable, is it, as a big chicken?
Right, for fans who don't know about the Bradford City Gent, right, you need to, when you listen to this, Google Bradford City Gent. It was a fat lad with a bowler hat wandering around the pitch, which is an interesting, and I think that you need to bring him back. On a one-man campaign, he should be brought back. But yeah, and really, you need to just be sponsored by Nando's and bring it together.
If we could, we would. I'm sure they'd bring loads of money to the game, wouldn't they? We could tap into that. But you can get a chicken bolty pie, but it's not to do with the Bradford bantam. So yeah,
I'm looking forward to that because it's so busy in here. We can't have that. We can't have the charcuterie I was promised. I'm a bit annoyed about that. Although Mark was saying to me before when I mentioned charcuterie, he said, "Well, this is the North. Just have crisps and be thankful for it." We've just been chatting about who's been playing well for our respective teams this year. I've been telling Mark all about Will Evans and his farming background and his 20 odd goals and whatever. But I don't know who to look out for today, other than Andy Cook, obviously. So who have I got to look out for, Mark? And who's been your player of the season?
For me, my player of the season is Jamie Walker. His passion, commitment and dedication to the club is brilliant. He plays centre midfield, he'll tackle anything. He's quite good going forward as well, but he's a proper player for me. He's just everything about it. But the player of the season is probably Brad Halliday. He's right wing back, and he pops up with goals. He gets forward, he'll tackle anything as well. But you'll see it today, every time there's a throw-in, he'll pinch about 20 yards. So just look out for that as well, but he's all right. But at the minute, the people to look out for is probably Bobby Poynton or Cavanna. They've only played last 6 or 7 games, but they've been good. So, yeah, Andy Cook to score, Jamie Walker to tackle the fridge, and Brad Halliday to pinch 20 yards.
Oh, he's summed it up there, hasn't he? A tackling, all-action, creative midfielder. I like the sound of that. I want us to buy him for next season. Right, I'm in the ground. Got in the ground. I've got a confession to make, however. I've also got a ticket. I think I put this on X or Twitter or whatever. So I've got a ticket for a load of gigs, all-day gigs over in Leeds at the Brudenell Social Club, the Diana venues. First band's on at 2:30. I'm calling it now. If we play as poorly as we've done at Barrow and Grimsby and we're losing badly, I'm off. How do you feel about that, Stu?
That's shocking behaviour. It's going to be 5-0 today to us, so you're going to have to stay to the end.
In the pub, I was having a chat with the Bradford fan. We were looking at odds. I've gone for us for a 3-1 win today, right? Bold. And he said, I think it's 66-1 for that.
Good odds.
So how was the trip up? Are we all right?
It wasn't too bad, yeah. It went quite quick, didn't it? Yeah. I think we probably slept some of it, yeah, I don't know. Yeah. But no, it's a nice ground to come to. We're looking forward to it. And we went to the kind of Bradford Arms, which is a really posh wine bar with charcuterie and all that.
Posh wine bar and Bradford don't go well together. I was very annoyed because I'd been in the bar expecting to get charcuterie and cheese. It was so busy, they said we're having to put a suspension on serving charcuterie and cheese. I mean, how bad is that? So I've had to have an emergency pie. But, you know, right, what I want to do really quickly, what sum up our season in three words? A mixed bag, I'm going with.
Fantastic, bad ending.
Yeah, Fraser.
We played United.
Yes, Chris is up. Hello, who are you?
Really poor finish.
Yeah. And last, but by no means, let's say the best last, Ollie. Three words.
Probably definition of roller coaster. We've had ups, we've had downs.
That's not three words. Ollie, yeah, as we know, can't count. There we go. What are we thinking about today?
I've had a few beers, so I'm confident. Yeah, I think we're going to get a result today. So it's going to be a draw, at least.
Right.
I just think I've been to so many games where I've been a supporter of a team that's chasing promotion, and some little crappy team turns up and just plays brilliant for some random reason.
They'll be nervous today. They're going to have a massive crowd in here. If we can hold them for a bit, they will be nervous. I've been in the North Street in Bradford, which is the main area where the Bradford fans drink. They're all very confident. Someone was saying it's our cup final. I don't think it's that, but I think they are a little bit nervous because they just think it's going to win.
I'll tell you what, Stu told me earlier in the season, football is a day out with a 90-minute break in the middle.
Yeah.
Football doesn't really matter to me anymore. I've come up to the North, I've had a point, I've revelled in the atmosphere.
Yeah.
I couldn't give a toss about the result.
Love it.
Football is more than just what happens on the pitch. It's the whole atmosphere around it. It's seeing familiar faces. It's going to the pub, having a pint with people. And I think that's what we should focus on, not the results, not the 7, possibly 8 losses in a row. Football is the people you watch it with.
I'll have a pint of whatever he's been drinking, I'll have some of that. Chris, what are you thinking about today?
I'm thinking probably one each, but we could potentially nick it. If we score first, I think we'll nick it. If we score first, we'll pull them under pressure.
So you don't think I'm going to get to the band that's on at 3:30?
I got a fiver on you going at 3:45, but there we are.
Yeah, we're running a sweepstake of what time I'm leaving the ground today. Right, let's get in there, see what it's all about. Right, team's up. Looks like the normal 5-3-2. We got Townsend in goals. Brighton on one side. Looks like Jameson, Sanka and Baker. Evans on the other. Bennett, Morris and Charlesley. Jeff got a Palmer holding up front. Interestingly, on the bench, Macca is on the bench with Digger. So, Macca coming back. Slightly stronger than we've been recently, maybe, but I tell you what, it's an amazing ground this for Division 4. Massive stand, loops round, really high, sort of vertiginous stands. It's amazing. How this club is at Division 4 level, I will never know. Floodlights are quite poor, though. There's only two of them, and they're not very good. That's my view. That's it. Right, here we go. I tell you what, though, we've been on the beach for ages. This pitch is awful. Well, clearly, we have been on the beach. We're ready. Ollie's brought the wrong kit. He's wearing white. We're in our ridiculous grey. Right, let's go. Here we are. Just want to say, before the game kicked off, there was a really brilliantly observed minute silence in commemoration of the victims of the Bradford fire, which I can really remember that. I'm old enough to remember that. For those who aren't, it was an absolute... one of the worst tragedies that's happened on a British football ground. So beautifully observed. Massive chance for Seb there. Did a good 1-2 with Jeff Carter, who's playing up front with. He was in. Defenders are closing. He had to get his shot away. And he's just smashed it past the post. That was a really, really, really good chance. It's even Stevens so far. I think I've missed the first band that's been on at the place I'm trying to get to, but, you know, it's still 0-0. 15 minutes in, still 0-0 here. Fairly even Stevens, to be honest. Bradford have had most of the ball, but we've probably had the most incisive chances, to be honest. Yeah, not doing too bad. Sigh. Decent, really. We've been all right, but, yeah, one down. Just a pretty straightforward ball in, and someone got his noggin on it, and it's in. To be fair, I've been quite impressed by Sanka. It's the first time I've had a look at him. You know, he's up against Andy Cook and others. He's looking all right. To be fair, we're looking all right. Bradford don't look world beaters here, but yeah, we're one down. Well, 2-0 down, so I reckon I'll be off shortly.
I don't know what happened there. I was just looking round and ball was in the back of the net. Basically like the new ball defence. Second goal, unsurprisingly, by Andy Cook. We've had a talk about that before the game. Oh, he scores against us. Right then, Oz, what have you made of that?
Well, before the match, you asked for a three-word summary of the season. I'll give you a one-word summary of this first half.
Stu, what do you think?
It looked okay for about half an hour. Like, comfortable. Yeah. And then they just scored two quick-fire goals.
Yeah.
Callum Kavanagh's got a man bun. I'm outraged by that.
Yeah.
So I don't know what... I'm going to quit football, I think.
Yeah, that's been a half that's been a bit strange, really. I mean, Bradford have had a lot of the ball, but we've looked quite incisive. But, yeah, just can't defend. Nightmare, really. So anyway, half-time 2-0. I'm now scrolling through the gig list in, see which bands I'm missing. If we go one more down, I think that's what I'm calling it. I don't know what to say, really. It's another away trip where we've been absolutely bobbins when it's coming. They've just been throwing balls into the box. And basically they've just picked up a loose ball there because they keep putting it into the box. We've cleared it to the edge of the box and he's just smashed it in and it's got in. You know, it's a well-hit strike. But if you keep conceding, if you keep letting the ball come in all the time, you're going to have problems. What have you thought, Sue?
I don't know. We just can't defend at all. We're just, every single attack is a threat. It's just the makeshift defence is just not good enough. And we knew that already. Yeah. I mean, it's just injuries have just taken the toll.
It's 3-0 down. I've had enough. There's bands playing in Leeds. I'm going to head over there now and watch them. So thanks everyone who's listened to this. At the end of the day, we've stayed up. We've got some, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what's going to happen next year with Jenks. What are we going to do? If we can get a first 11 out, because this team, you know, looking at this team now, we've got a 17-year-old playing right wing back. We've got a lone young player at centre back. We've got another 17-year-old centre back. And we've got the top goal scorer playing at left back. I mean, that's not ideal. See you all. Stay safe, everybody. I'm sure we'll do a League 2. We'll wrap up at the end of the season, but... Thanks for everything. Everyone who's listened and chipped in and done all those things. And I think Fleetwood and Carlisle have come down. So we'll see you back in the North next season. All the best, everybody.
Thanks, Ian. And what a shame you couldn't have ended the season on a victory. But we're delighted you'll be sticking with it all for another season. Incidentally, Ian skipping off early to go and watch a band wasn't great. But I'm pretty sure that when we got stuffed at home by Notts County... a few months back, I left early so I could get home in time for news night. If you've left a county game this season for something even more lame than that, text in. Incidentally, Ian was just out, by the way. This is actually the 52nd pod episode of the season by my count, and I would like to reiterate his thanks to everyone who's helped us along the way by sending stuff in, having a chat, donating to the pod, buying sticker packs, still available, link in the show notes. We're really grateful for your support. Right then, in the second half of the pod, we will talk about the trust meeting. But first up, let's have a quick word from our sponsors.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Right, welcome back. And we are on to item 2 of our business tonight, which is the trust meeting. Now, due to work stuff, I can be at Thursday night's meeting, but I'm delighted to be joined by a couple of friends of the pod who were there. So I've got Nigel Dutson. Now, Nigel, remind me, you were chair of the trust from when until when?
Oh, gosh. In the early 2010s, I think we finished in 2013, something like that.
Yeah, so you've been there and done it in the hot seat before. And as well as Nigel, we've got our old friend Amber Arnie. How are you doing, Arnie?
Really good, thanks, Ed. Good to see you.
Fantastic. Right, so for the uninitiated, there's a few things to talk about. There were some resolutions that we'll come on to in a moment. There was the big survey that was done of trust members, and then there was the sort of broader discussion about what the next stages are. But let's just start off with some of the headline figures, because that's always the interesting meat and potatoes of these sorts of discussions. So, Nigel, what were those headline figures about number of members and finances and so on?
First thing up, there were four directors there. They were the only directors left. So you had Paul Cook, Mike Everett, Bob Herrin, and Sean Johnson. So they were the only people that are left from the trust. Everybody else had resigned. Paul went through the headline figures, which is, at the moment, we have 1,618 members, which is a marked increase over the end of last year. For some reason, there was a massive surge in applicants for trust membership somewhere between the 20th and 25th of January.
Why could that have been?
Something to do with a fixture against the Newton Heath Railwaymen, I think it was. The financial summary was that the trust has given $115K to the club between July and March of the previous season, and this season has given $91,500K and will be in line to match the $115 they did the previous season. And they have $28,000 in the bank. However, the survey, which I know we're going to discuss in a little bit, suggested that quite a few people, intimated that they would allow their membership of the trust to lapse, probably to the extent of about 10% of the current membership. So that's obviously slightly concerning. And it was just in a passing comment that we gave about £8,500 per month to the club.
Yeah, I mean, there's some big numbers there in terms of the donations and some impressive numbers as well in terms of trust membership. But a 10% drop-off in membership seems quite optimistic to me, if anything, on the basis of what some people are saying. But the other things that were there on the agenda that was sent out to members were three resolutions, and there were a couple about elections, which I'll ask Arnie about in a minute. But the first one was about the sort of model rules by which the trust is run. It was quite technical, but you might be able to explain it in simple terms for small brains like mine, Nigel.
Well, basically, all trusts in the UK work to the model room rules set out by the FSA. The FSA rules for us were drawn up in such a fashion because we actually ran the club, so we were a trust-run club. We are no longer a trust-run club. We run in partnership with Hugh Jenkins, and as such, the model rules needed to be changed. I think there were 55 people there to vote, and it went 53 for, one abstain and one objection. So it was carried unanimously.
Yeah, and I guess some of that we'll pick up on it in a moment about that changing role for the trust in this new era. But what were the other two resolutions? Only they were about elections, right?
Yeah, that was really around about how and when the election process is going to take place. So it was things like, we'll do stuff as digitally or as inclusively as possible. So having people able to vote digitally, but also by post. There were things around the number of officers that we'll be looking to appoint. So looking for between 6 and 12, but with an ideal number of 8, I would have said, but 6 to be technically quorate. I think that's the number of directors that we really needed to have. And then there were some things around timings. So definitely the target was to have that new board of directors, the trust board, in place for the 1st of August, obviously for the start of season, but I think with an aspiration to do it sooner than that, so with elections taking place through June. And then there was one which was around who ends up being the representatives of the trust on the full football club board, and that was the proposal there that the elected committee should be the people who then choose who their representatives are on the main board of the football club. And as Nigel has said, along with all the other resolutions, those were passed with pretty healthy, bordering on massive majorities.
And then it sort of moved on to talk about the survey. Do we know what the... So if you've got 1,600 trust members, do we know how many filled out the survey?
213.
I mean, that's not too bad, you know. We've got local elections coming up next week. There'll be some wards in Newport that will have lower turnout than that. But, I mean, it wasn't... I don't know whether the representatives from the board said anything, but the kind of process for that wasn't great because everyone had an email sent out with a link that didn't work and that didn't help. And then I don't think a revised link went out. And then there was a question about, well, some people might be replying who aren't trust members. And it all felt a bit messy, but, you know, they still got a good, probably representative sample, I suppose, in terms of response. I don't know, what was the view about the process and then what was the view of the results?
Well, Colin Everett, first of all, apologised for all the errors that had gone out. But he said that he felt that the numbers that had replied was quite a good response considering local elections, as you've just said. So he felt that it was quite a good cover of possible opinions. And yeah.
And I think just to add, I think if people have got views and didn't feel like they'd had the opportunity to feed those in, then they'd still be very much welcome to do so. So there was still an opportunity for people to feed in their views there.
The process wasn't ideal, but you know, look, everyone makes mistakes, and the trust isn't infallible. I think there are bigger problems in the world than that. And yeah, so the turnout was okay. And then so what did he come back and say? What do people want the trust to do and focus on over the coming years?
So there were some things really around kind of crucial role, the central role of the trust should be sort of forward looking. It was very much around, you know, what sort of things should we be putting the money that we raise into, and the big numbers there came out for the academy, for better training facilities for the teams, you know, more facilities at Rodney Parade, albeit that the football club obviously doesn't have overall control of that. So those were a few of the big things there, just really trying to be focused on increasing membership and inclusivity. I think because we all recognise that the bigger the membership, the more inclusive that membership, the more powerful a voice that the trust has. And there was also a key bit around role as being the link, I guess, between the supporters and the main football board, and to Hugh Jenkins, obviously, as a critical player on that, just to make sure that those views of supporters are really heard. And that we get an opportunity to shape the future.
I mean, to my mind, that's the key thing, Rhett. And now the challenge is about how the trust adapts to being the voice of the fans to the club rather than being the voice of the club to the fans, because they're two very, very different things, and they require a very different culture within the trust and within the board. Is that sort of how you read it as well, Nigel?
Yes. The couple of issues that came up, which I thought was quite interesting. The form was approved by the FSA, but it was also approved by Hugh Jenkins. And Hugh was very interested that the trust should be strong and should work in support. He's very, very supportive of the trust being a part of this ongoing future. And out of that form, it was also agreed that 97% of the people that replied wanted the trust to put forward two directors onto the board. So it's obviously approved, really, the way to go. That is what we should be doing, putting two members onto that board. A couple of the phrases that came out of the bottom, which Colin made note of, one of them was guardian. Several people wanted the trust to be the guardian of the football club. The other one was to control our future. So quite a few people picked up that a strong trust will control the future of this club, perhaps on and beyond Hugh's tenure.
Yeah, owners come, owners go, but ultimately it's the supporters who will still be here in, you know, 10, 20, 30 years. So, yeah, a trust that has that long-term priority rather than the short-term of season to season, I think is really critical. And, I mean, you said it just before we hit record, Arnie, that the trust is now in this kind of identity crisis period of understanding its future role. So, I mean, what's your take on that?
Genuinely feels like a really critical time. So you're making that switch from the ownership of the club, you know, being the majority shareholder, to only being kind of in the minority there. And I think that's making lots of people, you know, at a time when money's tight and people don't have cash to splash around, just thinking, well, what's the point? What is the role of the trust? What does my putting 10, 15, 20 quid in a month, how is that going to make a difference when realistically most of the kind of big decisions are going to be being taken by the main board and Hugh Jenkins himself? So certainly a big identity crisis there around, well, what's that role going to be and how are we going to be able to influence things? There was obviously a bit of a changing of the guard in terms of the trust board, with all bar one clearly stating that they weren't going to run again. And you know, you can see why. Feels like a bit of a thankless task. They've had lots of criticism, ultimately, probably having taken on roles and responsibilities that ended up exceeding what they might have been expecting. And then you've got the whole point around, if membership does kind of continue to decrease, how do you kind of avert that, stop that, and try to get the kind of membership as high as it can be? Because it's clear that Hugh Jenkins still does want the trust to have an active role, both in terms of, as you say, being that link between the supporters and the main board, but also as a kind of a fundraising source as well, because he hasn't got a bottomless pot of cash. He's not some massive oligarch with the kind of bank balance that we hear about in the kind of Premier League. So that's still going to be really important. And it's kind of the one final point, I guess. Let's not forget that even though we've lost that majority shareholding, we are still a significant part of the football club. It's still, over a quarter, 27% of the club is owned by the trust. And we want to try and make sure that we keep, emphasize that to people, get as many people involved in kind of helping to keep the trust going and have that long-term view and sight and vision for the future of the club. So let's not lose sight of it is still a really major part of the football club.
I was just thinking we need a Bonnie Tyler, we need a hero, somebody to come out and really front this. It is an important role, but it's not very sexy. It's about stabilising the future of our club and planning for the future. There was some talk of the trust absorbing the other 21% of shares that are privately owned, so that we continue to grow our influence. And just to clarify, the four guys there all said they were going to stand down. Only Mike Everett is going to re-stand. And obviously Mike has some very individual skills that the club requires, such as arranging fixtures and legals for the club. So it would be great if he does stay on. And then there was the outline of what it takes to be a director for the club, which people might be interested if they're thinking about possibly standing. You have to be a trust member to stand. There will be training provided by the FSA, which I can tell you from my experience is excellent. Really outlines what your role is and why you're doing it. And they would really like directors to serve for about 2 years, if not three. At the end of three, they have to re-stand anyway. So you might want to look at how you can deal with that sort of level of commitment. And the view is that there would be monthly meetings. So,
but do we know timescale-wise then? So you said in June is when they're planning to hold it, so there'll be a kind of open nominations, closed nominations, give people time to put themselves up against each other and set out their kind of ideas if there's a contested election, and then have a vote, right? Is that the plan, to do all of that during June, July, so they can be in place for August?
Yeah, I think the aspiration really was to have it done kind of a month or so, so the beginning of July, a month or so before the football season starts in earnest. A few of us in the room probably felt like the likelihood of it actually going to a vote was pretty low. If they're looking to elect eight people, well, obviously you've got to have eight candidates, so everybody will need to put forward a bit of a manifesto and give information about themselves. But it certainly wouldn't be a surprise to me if it ended up being if you put your name forward, you're in by default, because I don't think I'd be quite surprised if it actually went to a vote if we had enough people to actually cause that to happen.
Yeah, I mean, it's no slight at all on the people who've been doing that role in very difficult circumstances in the past, but you should want to see contested elections for these sorts of things, so there can be that kind of battle of ideas and perspectives. You know, that suggests a kind of healthy range of views, but I'm with you. I think they may struggle to find out.
Yeah, there were a couple of other things that it was worth saying as well. So even though the existing board members all standing down with only one seeking re-election, as Nigel said, this was, you know, they were at pains to say that this was not them totally stepping back and just leaving it to new people coming in. I think that they probably want to make sure, given the change of nature of the role of the trust, that they let those new people shape it for themselves and take it forward. But there was still, you know, really positive offers of support from those four individuals that they would help in kind of handover process, just to help that kind of new board find its feet and make its way without kind of too much anxiety. And there was also a really fair point made, which was, you know, you don't have to be on the board. It's not only the board that can really help out and volunteer. So if people have got other skills that they think would be useful to the club, whether that's in social media or contacts for local businesses, those opportunities to try to raise money, you don't have to be on the board of the trust to still bring some of those things forward. And we shouldn't get into that mindset of thinking that all of that work needs to be done by the elected members of the board.
Yeah, there was a specific comment saying that Hugh is desperate for business contacts in the Newport area. So anybody out there that knows people or can direct people towards Hugh, he'd be more than interested to talk to them because, he just needs to spread the net as wide as possible.
Fantastic. Anything else then, gents, that you want to add in that you think people ought to know from that meeting, or have we covered it?
I would like to see the Trust go on a bit of a charm offensive and possibly come on this podcast and try and talk up the roles, explain what it's all about and generate a bit of enthusiasm because we need a club to pull together really and make this happen.
And the other bit to me was around one of those key things that is expected of the Trust is around transparency. So I think, you know, Nigel's absolutely right there. I think that would really help. I think it would also help if we could get you himself onto the podcast and speaking directly to fans, because I think it would certainly, in terms of the Trust, help provide some reassurance about how seriously he thinks that their role is, how serious he thinks their role is in the future of the football club. And it would be great to hear that, I think, from him directly.
Well, I've not put you up to this, gents, but yeah, thank you for making that suggestion. We will certainly push that to the people you've mentioned. Well, look, thank you both, gents, for your time of talking us through that.
No problem at all. Felt like an easier gig than Ian might have had up at Bradford yesterday. So even though it might not have been all that exciting, I think that's probably a consistent message at the moment.
Got to say, for all those years I used to go to football with my old man, I didn't know I was going to be more worried about figures than goals, but...
That is the life of the modern football fan having to learn to read a balance sheet as well as a scoreline. Well, look, thank you both. And thanks to all of you who've been listening. As I said earlier, that's 52 episodes, I think, since this same point last season. So we've averaged an episode every week. I've got to be honest, that's probably more than we anticipated. And we might have slightly fewer next season, but it's been a hell of a journey. And we're very grateful to all of you who've joined us on it. We will have an in-depth season analysis episode with the whole panel in the next few weeks, by which times we'll know the club's retained list and possibly a few other bits of information. And yeah, we've got a few ideas for some summer specials, which we'll let percolate, but we'll bring you more about that in due course. But for now, hopefully it's enough just to say, for the very, very last time this season, look after yourselves, look after each other, and above all, keep it County.
Away day holidays are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.